Hey Blenders, on this week's episode, we talk about the Willy Wonka prequel, we discuss whether Chris Evans should return to Captain America, and name our favorite movie dogs.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 150 of Real Blend, a podcast that can't wait to watch the television sitcom spinoff Malcolm and Marie in the middle. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend, also the managing editor Blend, and the co-host of the Real Blend podcast. This week, we'll be talking about, thank you, Kevin, the Willy Wonka prequel. And the two names that are being bandied around for the black and white film, Wonk. Chris Evans potentially returning as Captain America, or not, if you listen to Chris Evans. And your favorite movie dogs are going to be the center of the hashtag movie dogs blend, a game that we'll play at the end of the show. But before we get to that, I want to welcome back to the show Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kev. How are you?
Woo! Sean, Jacob, Gabriel.
Look how handsome he is.
He does look really good. Good to see you guys. I like that Ready Player One hat as well, too.
Dude, that is a great hat. I almost watched that last night.
The only reason I ever wear this hat, by the way, if you ever see this hat on, it's because I was too lazy to do my hair.
Nice.
Wait, are there other hats that indicate other things? Is that hat specific?
This is my go-to, like, get out of the shower, like, not put gel on my hair, come downstairs and do the show hat.
Wow.
I have a label for it. It says exactly that underneath it.
The other co-host who doesn't understand the meaning of the phrase, I did not do my hair. Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago.
I don't understand the phrase of do my hair. Woke up like this.
Yeah, right. That's probably true. Once an hour, every hour, thanks to your dog eating a cupcake.
Yeah, yeah. Sidebar, my dog is having stomach issues and her tummy hurts.
And if he decides to say something this week, producer Gabe. How are you, Gabe?
How's it going, guys?
You got a lot of love for being on the show last week.
I did.
A lot of love.
Generous.
Generous as, yes. They would like you to be at least a small box somewhere on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, if you're watching us on YouTube, hello, everybody. Thank you very much for following the show on this channel. Make sure that you hit like and subscribe. If you're listening to us where you get your podcast needs met, please head down to the description and figure out where you can go over to the YouTube channel and follow us there, because every once in a while we have a guest and you can watch those guests interact with us. Not this week in particular, because we do not have a guest, but we have plenty of other really cool people coming. If you would like an ad-free access to the show, and in addition, access to a premium show that we record once a week, make sure you head over to bit.ly/realblendpremium.
How many different versions of our show do we have?
A lot. Just a lot. And they're all like pretty good. So when you add them all together, it's one great film podcast experience. But the premium one, I think, is up to like 25 episodes now at this point. So nice little catalog of really fun sort of bonus episodes. And this week is going to be a fan favorite, a listener mailbag. So we'll be answering some of your questions. You guys
are
nice.
We're 150 for Real Blend, for regular
150
episodes?
Yes.
How many episodes until we enter syndication and we can just start rerunning?
Well, it was 100.
It was 100's a marker?
Well, I've been earning money.
Why are we pushing out new ones, man? We're in syndication. Let's just...
I've been earning some residuals off of this. You guys are not getting those checks?
Oh, you pulled a Seinfeld.
Yeah, right, exactly. Let's get to the weekly poll. Another standard thing that we run every single week on the Real Blend show. And last week's poll, due to the fact that we were now able to see the first two episodes of WandaVision, was, and Kevin, I'm going to put this one to you, so you got to pay attention to the answers. So far, WandaVision is ... And here are your choices. Awesome. Kind of weird, kind of cool. Disappointing and terrible.
Well, I'm gonna answer for myself and say it's awesome. But I'm gonna say that the majority of people probably said what's the second one? The kind of cool, kind of weird.
Kind of weird, kind of cool. Yes.
That's the one I'm gonna go with, because I feel like, and I don't know, because our listeners are really into the MCU, so it probably isn't that weird, but I could imagine like a somebody who's not MCU knowledge based and watching the show and being confused. Either also young kids don't get the references to all the to the
I would the say kind of weird, kind of cool.
I think kind of weird, kind of cool. I think it's awesome. I love. I've actually watched the first two episodes twice. I really enjoy it.
Well, I want to get to your breakdown in a second, but you're correct. Kind of weird, kind of cool. Got 45.3%. Awesome got 43%. So the two of them dominated. Disappointing got 7%, and terrible got 3%. So you've watched the first couple episodes multiple times?
Yeah, only because I was interested in watching them after the screeners we got, just to see how it looked on, like, on the full platform. And I got sucked into it. I mean, they're 25, 29 minute episodes. That's kind of why I love Ted Lasso so much, because they were short episodes, and like you could just like run with it and play with it, and you could put it on for 25 minutes and then walk away. But WandaVision, I got to give props to the prop department, I guess, from the sense that they're doing everything practical in those first episode specifically. All the all that stuff in the kitchen with the plates and the wine, and like, they went old school, like total old school with wires on the plates and everything. I was very impressed with the obviously the technical aspects of it, the way they did the aspect ratio shifts. I always love the beginning of the first episode. I think it's just the first one that does this, where it's like the full blown Marvel logo, and then it squeezes into the 4:3, and then it becomes almost like mono sounding. I also think that their dedication to the performances are brilliant. I love the way how much they're into it, how much they're into the bit of like being that over the top, like very old school, shooting it in front of a live audience in the first episode, having real laughs in that first episode, which is really cool. I think they added the laughs later on in the other episodes because they only did the first episode live.
Right.
But yeah, I think to be honest with you, it actually really kind of gave me more of an appreciation for Olsen as an actor. I mean, I've always thought she was a great actor, and I think that in those big Avengers films, she's always been great in them. But to see her kind of expand on that range in this like era of sitcom television, I find to be really interesting. And I think Bettany does a great job with it as well. I mean, they really smashed that plate over his face in the first episode. I mean, it's breakaway plate. Special effects, but I just found the show to be so tangible, and I like the mystery of it. I don't know where it's going. Sean, I think I saw a tweet today that you said the Cinema Blend team has figured out what they think the mystery is. I mean, for me, we haven't seen anything else more than everybody else has, except for the third episode, which again I don't think gives much away either. There's the question of how is this possible, right? So the Vision being dead in Infinity War, he dies twice, right? So it seems like a Truman Show situation where is she creating the world to keep him alive, kind of thing. I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm only really doing speculation beyond because we've all seen the first three episodes. I've gone back to rewatch them. It's funny, you go back to rewatch them because of all of the form and the format. And while I love that too, and I think
you're looking for Easter eggs.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm reading into every bit of line of dialogue, and I have a working theory that I can share here that I think Catherine Hahn is very responsible for a lot of stuff that's going on to Wanda.
Yeah.
And there are moments now when you watch it, if you view it, that she might be the villain. And again, this is just a guess on my part. I'm early into the season the way everybody else is. When Wanda starts to figure stuff out, like she holds up that colored helicopter, and she's looking back at the house, and then Catherine Hahn will pop into the scene and be like, you know, there's the star of the show, and like distract her from it, right? And there's a reason why too, during the dinner party, the first episode, like she comes to the front door and kind of interferes on the dinner date. And you would, in a sitcom, that would happen too, right? The nosy neighbor would pop in. But if you're looking at it from a more like devious, like, oh, is she trying to interfere because Wanda's about to come really close to figuring out what's going on? Or I like to watch it with those goggles on and sort of figure that stuff out.
There's a scene, and again, I can't remember if this is in episode 3, so I'm going to refrain from saying what it is. But there is a scene specifically where that question came into my mind based on a reaction from a character.
Okay.
But I won't say where it is because I can't remember if it's in 2 or 3. I don't remember. But there are like Sean is saying, there's definitely some elements there. And the Monica Rambeau thing, I'm very fascinated to see where that kind of goes off to. I think Teyonah Parris is great casting for that. I love the connection, and Jake and I were discussing this after the junket, was that, you know, that she's the young girl from Captain Marvel, and, you know,
did not know. Like, I know that's on IMDb, but, like, had it not been on, like, was that announced that that's who she was playing? Well, did they use her name in the show? Because I it wasn't until after the junket that someone was like, oh, yeah, she's playing the character from Captain Marvel. And I was like, hell, I didn't know that.
Is it Lashana Lynch, right? Was from, she's the mother of Monica Rambeau, correct?
Yes, correct.
Right.
Because
so
that's set in 91 or 92.
Right.
Whenever Captain Marvel
what was Lashana's character's name? It was something Rambo.
It was.
But the little girl that's there's that scene in Captain Marvel where they're on the porch of the house, right?
Yes.
And like she's in her suit, and then the little girl comes outside and like talks to her about her Captain Marvel suit. That's Monica Rambo. That's the character that's in.
But how did we all know as an audience that that's who?
I don't think it's been revealed in the show yet.
It hasn't.
I think it's just something
just
that Marvel kind of made known.
Yeah,
I'm kind of surprised that they let that be known.
Yeah, because it's pretty big
reveal. Considering how secretive they are about things.
Do they call her Monica Rambeau in the first two episodes?
I don't think so.
She's Geraldine. Is her character in the show, like in the episodes that Wanda has created.
But when I interviewed her, this is not a spoiler, when I interviewed her, her IMDb listed her as Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
And she talked at length about the connection. So anybody listening to this, we're not spoiling anything. It's actually out there,
I think Feige said it at the investors call that they're going to have Monica Rambeau as a character. So
because in the trailer, you see a gigantic sequence where she seems to be like pushed onto the ground, like, and she's like laying backwards and her face turns over towards the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe, you were going to chime in about the name, I think.
Well, you asked about Lashana Lynch. Her name in Captain Marvel is Maria Rambeau.
Right. Okay. And then her daughter is Monica Rambeau. Okay, cool. All right, that makes sense. Right. So does Maria Rambeau not become a superhero as well?
I don't think so.
What's her storyline? Because at the end of Captain Marvel, are we not going to finish with her? Is she not going to come back? Because, I mean, technically speaking, Geraldine from WandaVision's mom could still be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the
but
MCU.
She might not be, 20 years later, might not be much, have much to do with.
She could factor in. I wouldn't be surprised if she factored in.
And Monica Rambeau in the comics, to clarify, is the first Black Avenger, right, to actually lead the Avengers. Female a Black Avenger, I believe.
I think so.
I want to say that's in the comics, that's Monica Rambeau's, like, a big
part
of her
character.
And
they've got a bunch of other things, too. Like, Captain Marvel 2, she's going to be part of that sequel. And I know they're having a Miss Marvel show. There's plenty of other places where they're going to be able to grow to. I think Lashana Lynch, not to diverge briefly, I think she's going to get handed the James Bond baton. Like, she's a significant character in No Time to Die. She's another 00, because Daniel Craig says at one point in the trailer, like, I met your other 00. And part of what I was getting at when I was saying it's going to be fun to see how they close out Craig's storyline is that I wouldn't be surprised if they passed the baton to her and she carried on the James Bond franchise.
Well, isn't she not just when the movie starts, isn't she not just another 00? Like, isn't she 007 when the movie starts?
Oh, is she?
Because
she
that was my understanding, that he's like retired when the movie starts.
Right.
And they have to give the number to someone else. So she's 007 when the movie starts.
That would be pretty cool.
She was amazing in Captain Marvel. I don't love Captain Marvel, but
agreed.
She was a standout. Yeah,
I agree. See her. So this brings us to a segment that we did last week where Jake and Gabe and I gave our five anticipated films, of 2021. Kev, I want to give you an opportunity to weigh in real fast with your films.
I'm just going to list these, but do you guys remember yours real fast? Just off top, I don't know yours, so I'm just interested to see what you guys had on your lists.
I would have to go back. I know that Spider-Man was on mine. I know No Time to Die was definitely on mine. Ghostbusters Afterlife was there. Yeah.
Mine was Dune, Spider-Man 3, Matrix 4, Mission Impossible 7, and No Time to Die.
Okay. I went number 5, I went Last Night in Soho, because I'm really looking forward to Edgar Wright's next film. I mean, I think also a lot of that has to do with Anya Taylor-Joy. After Queen's Gambit, I'm just obsessed with her character, or just her as an actor. It's funny because, like, recently I've been doing that. Like, I watched Malcolm and Marie recently, and after that movie ended, I became obsessed with Sam Levinson. So I went back and watched. I'd never seen Euphoria, and I rented his first film, Assassination Nation. So same thing happened with Last Night in Soho, just based on Anya Taylor-Joy's performance in Queen's Gambit, that makes me automatically excited for it, on top of Edgar Wright directing it and shooting on film and everything.
Huge movie in the O'Connell house right now is Baby Driver. My boys tend to watch, and for whatever reason, you guys know my boys don't love movies, but they'll find a movie and then they'll just wear it out. And right now they're wearing out Baby Driver.
And that, and one of the best soundtracks, if you're a vinyl, if people on listening have it on vinyl, it's a great vinyl, and it's a really cool open vinyl. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that Last Night in Soho, I'm excited about strictly because of those two names.
Good one.
And I think it got bumped up because of Anya Taylor-Joy, honestly. I don't know much about this next movie, but I chose it only because of the director is Babylon. I mean, I don't really know what, this is Damien Chazelle's.
Is that coming out this year?
According to release dates that I've seen, unless it's been pushed, it comes out in December.
I think it was originally, and I think they haven't started. They were supposed to already start filming. I think it technically got moved to next year.
Okay, well, if it's pushed,
I'll allow it. That's how excited I am for it.
That's fair, yeah.
Friend of the show can get on the list.
Yes. Yeah.
If Babylon gets pushed, then I'll put it on next year, but the only reason I'm excited about it is Damien Chazelle. And isn't Emma Stone, or wasn't Emma Stone in it, but that she had to leave?
I think it's Margot Robbie and someone. Yeah, Emma Stone was initially, but now it's Margot.
Isn't Brad Pitt in it?
That's what it is. It's Margot and Brad Pitt.
Yeah. All right, number three is Fast and Furious 9, only because I'm obsessed with the Fast franchise. I understand it's the ninth one. I get that it's probably tired by this point, but I love any time a new one comes out because I want to see how extreme they go. And I've always been a fan of them. I know we all love Fast 5. I love Furious 7. 8 was cool. I didn't love 8, but 8 was cool. It did have a moment where The Rock diverts a missile with his bare hands into a vehicle that explodes. So, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I look forward to what they're going to do. And I actually really like the family storyline. I like the characters. I actually enjoy the characters in Fast and Furious. I do.
They've come so far from talking about carburetors to diverting missiles.
Dude, I will never forget. Like, I've seen the first one so many times, and when Paul Walker goes up to order that tuna sandwich at that restaurant from Jordana Brewster, I'll always remember the little details of those little characters. I love those movies. No Time to Die is number two, and then Dune's number one. So I mean, I feel like those are obvious. Dune is weird for me because I'm not necessarily excited about Dune from a story standpoint. It's just because Denis is directing it. I mean, to be honest with you, he is the only reason why I'm like very excited about it, because he has not made a bad movie. And I have a hard time believing that he's going to make a bad one with this one, considering the cast he has with Brolin and Zendaya and Chalamet. And obviously No Time to Die, I think primarily because of the fact that Fukunaga shot on IMAX film, and I can't wait to see kind of how that plays out. So
very cool.
That's my most anticipated.
I worry about No Time to Die moving out of April.
It will.
Oh, it's absolutely moving out of April.
You think so?
Oh, 100%.
Back to November?
Yeah.
So what is it, Black Widow? Are we looking at Black Widow as the next potential movie that we might get to see in a theater? Because I feel like Marvel's going to hold on to it. Yeah, in a theater.
Well, depending on whether or not theaters are open around you by that point, it could be Godzilla versus Kong, which is March.
March. Theaters are open by me.
Yeah,
Chicago just went to the next tier up, so I'm hoping that's moving in the right direction, because that is a movie that it's not that I'm saying, oh my god, it's gonna be better than, you know, fill in the blank movie X, but it's one of the top movies I like quite literally want to see on the big screen.
Yeah,
it's freaking Godzilla and King Kong. Like if there were ever a movie that was made to experience on the big screen, it's Godzilla and King Kong fighting each other.
I know. Well, I'm going to jump ahead in our list as well, too, because another movie that I really hope that I get an opportunity to potentially see on the big screen is the Snyder Cut. I think...
Wait, are you excited about the Snyder Cut?
Marginally. I did a video with Hannah Solik, our video team leader today, for part of our Snyder Cut series, where we lamented the fact that it's the middle of January, this movie is theoretically coming in March, and we still don't know the release date, nor do we know whether it's going to be a four-part miniseries on HBO Max or the full four-hour cut. And what happened recently was somebody asked Zach on social media whether it is episodic or one-shot, like a full one-shot feature, and he said one shot. And I don't know if... I still, again, don't know with any clarity if whether he just means that, like, it's his four-hour version and they just chopped it into four pieces, or if now HBO Max is putting out the full four-hour version. And one of the things that I think that I'm speculating as to why we don't have a date yet is because he's still negotiating behind the scenes to get some type of theatrical release with it, like a day and date type thing, since Warner Brothers has shown interest in doing this with their HBO Max versions. And so it's kind of where we're at now at this point. I'll ask you guys this as, well, Kevin, you're more of a fan than Jake is. Jake, you're pretty casual in terms of these movies. Are you interested at all in a 4-hour version? Jake, I'll start with you. A 4-hour version of the Justice League film.
Look, I am very much anticipating the Snyder Cut. I got to be honest. If it comes out in a 4-hour version, I'm going to need to break it up anyway. So I wish that it would just be properly episodic.
Right, right. Bite size on HBO Max.
Yeah.
Kev, what about yourself?
I'm cool with the 4-hour.
Yeah, in a theater?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like the other day, I was going to put on Malcolm X, which is like 3 hours and 15 minutes or something like that. And it's basically like watching 4 episodes of a television show. Really. You just our minds are strange, right? Like, we sit down and watch a 3-hour film that feels longer than watching three one-hour episodes of a TV show, right? For some reason, there's a mental element to it because there's a beginning and the end of an episode, so you feel that you've accomplished something, essentially, by getting to the end of the episode and jumping to the next. Like, I knocked out, like, 3 episodes of Euphoria one night, and it didn't feel long to me. But there is something to be said about a 4-hour film. We know we talked to Quentin Tarantino for Hollywood about the reasoning they split up Kill Bill and kind of like the cut that he had for the film and everything. And I just find it interesting. I think at this point, this is Snyder's film and let him do what he wants with it. If he wants to make a 4-hour movie, I'm game. I can't wait to see it.
One of the big reasons why I like the episodic nature of it is I was pointing out the fact that, like, with shows like The Mandalorian and currently with WandaVision, it allows you to talk about what has happened so far. Because everybody's on the same page. You know, anytime a season binges, you really worry about what you can say to somebody because you don't know how far they've gotten into it. So if it is 4 1-hour HBO Max episodes, I like the fact that everybody can talk about what just happened in it. And I think that raises awareness for it, but could also be a really strong word of mouth. You know, if it's going well for the first two episodes, people who are really hesitant to check it out might go back and watch the first two. I think about how shows like Lovecraft Country and Watchmen built up their audiences because they were really good. And people were like, oh, you got to be checking this. So by the time we were 4 or 5 episodes into Watchmen, I was like, I guess I better get on board with it because everyone's talking about it. So,
yeah. But I would argue that we already know the arc of Justice League, though.
Yeah. For sure.
So, we already know the beginning and the end. I mean, again, we haven't seen it, but I would assume that the beginning and the end, character-wise, from an arc perspective, are probably relatively similar.
But do we, though? Because, I mean, the Justice League that we got was 2 hours, and a majority of it we're not re-seeing. And if it's 4 hours, that means it's 2 hours plus whatever new footage we're getting. So, that's a lot of stuff that can happen that we don't know.
Certain beats will hit, you know, certain plot beats will hit, but I think Zach's bringing a lot more than people anticipate.
Right. And I get that. But I mean, I guess looking forward to each week, you kind of know where the movie ends. Wait, because the end of Justice League, the final fight sequence, was that Snyder's or Whedon's?
Whedon's.
Didn't Snyder make a comment about like, it's not even going to like. It's not going to look like that. It's going to look
totally different.
Correction that Whedon did on that final fight scene is completely off. Where do you think, if it's 4 episodes, is it end of episode 2 that Cavill comes back? Where do you think Cavill comes back?
During episode 3, I think.
Oh, so you think it'd be that long?
It's pretty far. It'd be pretty deep into it. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that
happened. Okay, I'm actually I'm getting jacked at the idea of it happening.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll know, and hopefully Zach will join us on this show because he'd be a tremendous guest to talk about his filmography and all things Snyder Cut, obviously.
Have you been trying to make that happen?
Let's get really close to the next story, which is Chris Evans theoretically returning as Captain America. So this is a rumor that actually it started in the trades. So it's like a legitimate news source that reported that they were saying Captain America, Chris Evans was negotiating to return to the role in a feature film. They specified it was feature film because some people started to speculate right off the bat, was it Disney Plus? Could he potentially have a role in one of the episodes of Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Are they going to do a Disney Plus series that goes back through Cap through time? You know, someone had suggested, what if one episode of each one is him returning one of the Infinity Stones?
I like that. That's my favorite thing that I've heard. That's a potential, and not that he's like full blown back, but just like he's coming back for 6 episodes, and then
I think that would be tremendous.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
That's a cool way. So then, but
that would be awesome.
Evans comes around and he says, you know, he puts out a tweet that says news to me, and you know, I can't take anything that actors say seriously in terms of their contract negotiations, because as Jake was quick to point out, there's multiple people who have said that they don't know anything about these casting stories. And then it
turns
out
Henry Cavill stared me in the face and said there was no Snyder cut that he knew about.
Henry Cavill did the Justice League junket, but wouldn't admit that he was in Justice League, which always blows my mind.
Yeah. That's astounding. They just lie. The other one that
we were talking about is Liam Neeson was recently asked about whether or not Qui-Gon Jinn could appear as a Force ghost in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series that's happening. And he was very like, oh, I'd be, you know, interested if they called me. And a lot of people pointed out to the fact that that's very similar to how Ewan McGregor used to answer when people would ask him. And Ewan McGregor revealed that he had known about the Kenobi series for a long time. And people were asking him about it, and he basically was like, yeah, I've been lying to people for years. Like, that's what you have to do.
I guess you do have to do that,
So the fact that Ewan McGregor just straight up came out and said, like, yeah, like, we find out about these things, but we can't say anything, so when you ask me, I'm going to lie to you. And so now every time I hear Liam Neeson, I can't believe that Liam Neeson is just straight up going, like, I'd like to reprise this character, and Disney's going, nah.
Why would you have to bring him back? Like, I don't understand. He's dead.
That was his... Have you never fucking seen Star Wars?
No, I've seen Star Wars, believe me.
Do you know how many times Alec Guinness came back to teach?
So he's just going to be a Force ghost?
Of course. That was his... It was a master and apprentice. Like, Obi-Wan was Qui-Gon's apprentice. Hmm. Of course, like, in the same way that Luke saw Obi-Wan...
Right.
Obi-Wan would see Qui-Gon Jinn.
Sean's being real Harrison Ford about this whole thing right now.
Yeah. Well, did you ever see that Harrison Ford quote that someone asked, did you come back in episode 9 as a Force ghost? And Harrison Ford said something like, I don't know what a Force ghost is, and I don't fucking care.
It's just classic.
I love how it's like, it's funny now that he talks like that.
Yeah.
Like it's actually kind of comical that he just doesn't care.
I think he leans into it. I think he knows that it's funny.
There is.
I actually don't think he really cares, to be honest with you.
He does not care.
I don't think he cares.
There were set photos that just got posted of this village that they're building in outside, like in the outskirts of London in the countryside. And the town is furious. The town that's nearby is furious because they think that this set is going to be up for 3 years because they're filming Obi-Wan there. And it looks like Tatooine. Have you not seen these pictures? They're in the Daily Mail. They're in the Daily Mail. They were out today. And it's like a physical set that they built. And you could see it's like the buildings of Tatooine. And the residents believe that this is going to be there for 3 years. And they're going to be filming Obi-Wan. Because I would assume multiple seasons, right?
Sure. Like, I thought it was just I thought it was a limited thing.
I don't know. They said 3 years in this article, which makes me really think curious, that they'd be filming it for a while.
There's some great stuff that happens, I think, in Rebels, where I don't know how much you guys know about like the final fight between Obi-Wan and Darth Maul. And I'm curious as to if we would get live action recreations of things that are already canon. So I'm really curious to see if that, because I'd love to see a live action final fight between Obi-Wan and Darth Maul.
We are way off track. Should Evans come back as Captain America?
I think it really does need to be something like the returning the Infinity, because like Endgame, for all the issues I had with it, was a perfect send-off for that character. And I think you got to be really like, it's so hard to wrap up a character perfectly. And when you do it, to risk within 18 months risk ruining that for a limited Disney Plus series seems.
Kev, that's why you say. That's why you say no.
Yeah, I mean, I want there to be stakes in the MCU. I need stakes in order to be emotionally invested in it. And it's like I just genuinely, I don't want to see. I mean, I don't know if this is blasphemous to say. I don't want to see Downey Jr. back as Iron Man. I don't want to see Evans back as Cap. I just don't want to see it because not that they're not great in the roles. I actually watched Ultron again the other day, which is not as bad as I remembered it was, but it's pretty good. I just find that like that finality that I got in Endgame was as a fan after 23 MCU films was, I feel like that was earned, and I feel like by bringing it back it cheapens it.
Devil's advocate. Because largely I agree with you guys. Like, I don't necessarily want to see these guys back. However, if we're about to plunge heavy into the multiverse, and you're going to get another, an alternate version of Captain America who shows up, I don't want them to recast. I would still want Evans to be able to play a version of Captain America if he's not playing the Captain America that we know.
Well, see, I would want another actor to play it, because the multiverse being that Spider-Man's played by multiple people. I mean, they're not all Tom Hollands. Yeah, they're not all...
Right.
I feel like I was just watching, I just ordered the Spider-Verse 4K, and I was, it popped it in before I came down here, and I was listening to Chris Pine in the beginning.
My favorite.
So many different Spider-Mans in the film. I'm like, I mean, there can totally be... I just don't think... I think Evans needs to move on. I think Evans... Do another team movie sequel or something like that.
I was kind of hoping when I first saw the speculation about Evans coming back, my first thought was that it was going to be a multiverse in Spider-Man, but it was going to be him as his Fantastic Four character and have Tom That's Holland cool. be really confused, like whenever he saw him as Fantastic or as the Johnny Storm. And don't shake your head. I don't know. and basically have Tom Holland be like, wait, what?
I was shaking my head at all of you saying different Johnny names over each other. No one had any clue. Is Johnny Storm?
So we will see how that plays out. Evan says it's news to him, but we'll see.
I'd rather see an entire movie based on his Scott Pilgrim character versus him return as
God. That's my favorite X.
Big
fan. Why wouldn't you be?
He's great in that.
You're all right in that Evans doesn't need it anymore. Like, I watched his Defending Jacob series. I thought he was really good in it. I liked Gifted. You know, he's directing. Yeah. He directed the movie with Alice Eve too. So
yeah.
It's fine for him to move on. And Marvel has announced 20-something projects, you know, that they have coming. It's not like they need to revert back to those original characters. So we will see where they go. But speaking of, oh, Lord, speaking of reverting back to characters that we know already, I get to tell you guys who is up for the role of Willy Wonka in a brand new Willy Wonka prequel. That the only reason I am borderline interested in this is that it's coming from the director of the Paddington films, Paul King. And the two Paddington films, if you haven't seen them yet, for God's sakes, put a little joy in your life and go watch those movies, because they are fantastic, to the point where Paddington 2 made my top 10 the year that it came out. And both of you guys said you were going to watch it, and I'm sure you haven't yet to this day. Kevin used to say he'd see it on an airplane and still not choose to see it. He would put on Dunkirk for the 100th time.
Look, Kevin's got to watch Lost, so back off on your Paddington, all right?
That's true, that's true.
So here are the two names that, according to the reports on the day that we are recording, are up to play a young Willy Wonka.
Chris Evans.
Timothée Chalamet. And Tom Holland. I'll go first. Neither of those sound good to me.
Chalamet, I'm interested in Chalamet.
Between the two, I'd like to see Chalamet do it. But it's not that neither of them have the ability to do it. I just feel like they're both better than that project.
Yes.
Like, I'd rather see them do other things.
Anything else.
Yeah.
Honestly. I just watched...
When you hear Tom Cruise has signed on for another Jack Reacher, it's like... Not that you're going to do a bad job, it's just you're better than this.
I watched Tom Holland in Cherry, the Russo's film, and that dude has a ton of talent. And he is primed for really big things and does
you
not need to be...
rubbing in when you've seen a movie that we haven't seen.
Oh, like you, just... you don't? Like,
well,
you don't?
You know, I was thinking about it. When I was watching Malcolm and Marie the other day, I was really thinking about this.
So I don't know what's going to happen with this. I don't really know what the...
why?
Thank you. Thank you.
I just don't understand it.
Because Warner Brothers owns the IP.
Here's something. I like the Burton version of Willy Wonka.
I don't dislike it.
I don't remember.
I think there are some really interesting things in it. I'm just tired of seeing Tim Burton's version of fill in the blank.
Yeah, because it is.
I'm tired of
similar.
Tim Burton's version of Planet of the Apes and Tim Burton's version of Willy Wonka and Tim Burton's version of Alice in Wonderland and Tim Burton's version of Dumbo. Like, wow. Dude, like, give me some. Give
when
me
did-
like.
I
watched
Tim Burton hurt you.
Yeah.
No, am I wrong? Like his career over the last 20 years has turned into putting a filter on a story we already know.
Yeah.
Like putting the Tim Burton filter.
There's a lot of that.
I don't even know if that was his fault either. I feel like studios just came to him and offered him a bunch of money to do like his version of everything.
True.
I actually watched Ed Wood for the first time a few weeks ago. I'd never seen Ed Wood. And I was just blown away by how brilliant that film was. Martin Landau.
Dude, he won the Oscar for how great was he in that?
God, what a performance. Anyways, that's totally
off
topic.
But that's back when Burton was doing... No, that's when he was doing films that he wanted to do. And not just like Jake said.
That was R-rated Burton, too. Yeah.
Because what did he do recently? He did Dumbo, and he did something before that, too. That also felt pretty lazy. Was it Alice in Wonderland?
He had such a good stretch, though. Like that whole like Sleepy Hollow.
The 90s. Oh,
Sweet. Yeah. All that stuff. Yeah.
And then there was a splash in the late 2000s when he did what I think is his best movie, which is Big Fish.
Yeah.
Which kind of showed, which again, it is still an adaptation, but not so well known that it was like, and it was actually even very scaled back Tim Burton. But I miss someone give Tim Burton the money to just do something original.
Well, it goes to show that just because you've made a couple of really great films doesn't mean you have 1,000 great films in you. I think that's a little bit unfair of our directors.
We're on episode 150 of this podcast.
Right? I also I don't think there's anything wrong with a really good director transitioning, at least for stretches, into being a director for hire. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know.
But I think it does cheapen the style that he's created. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah, where, like, but he's not making...
It turns his style into a product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're talking about Disney movies. That's the whole... It's a machine.
Like, for example, when Guy Ritchie did Aladdin, that his voice was not even in that movie. I wish they made a Guy Ritchie Aladdin. I would love to see Guy Ritchie
Aladdin.
That probably
helped him justify financing... a lot of other movies. So it's, you know, it is what it is.
Someone was just saying that too. Someone's quote came, and I'm not that it's anything new, but like I do one of the big ones in order to pay for the little ones. And it wasn't Guy Ritchie, but it was someone similar to that who said like, I got to make this movie because I made...
He's still making money off of Aladdin right now.
Didn't Aladdin do $1 billion? Yeah,
it is literally Will Smith's most successful film.
God.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
which is
insane.
Which hurts my heart a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, people
like,
not seeing
that is
the
world
state.
We live in.
Yeah,
or Bad Boys for Life. All right, let's get to this weekend movies. I want to bring up the fact that The Kid Detective, which was number 5 on the Real Blend list of top movies for 2020, is now available on VOD. So there's a lot of people who didn't get to see this in theaters. Sony held on to its theatrical release when it came out, and it just flew under the radar. Rightfully so. It was tough to get to the theaters when the movie came out. It's really different. The movies that we were referring to when we were talking about in our top 10s, things like Rian Johnson's Brick, things like The Nice Guys by Shane Black, things like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang by Shane Black. Just a really unique original world that was created by this director. And Adam Brody is fantastic as a one-time kid detective who's still trying to solve crimes. And so you are now able to check this out on VOD. I'm going to mention that all three of us cannot recommend it highly enough. And if you want to, after you've seen it, go back through our old episodes, find our interview with the director, and he'll give you, and with Adam Brody, and they'll give you some fantastic insight into the work that they did in putting that film together. Netflix has a movie called The White Tiger that I do not know anything about. Either of you guys seen it? White Tiger?
I have not seen that. No. And for people listening, this is a bit of a slower movie week. So these titles are like, rough. It was interesting because last week there was so much. I know you guys did the show when I was out, like one night in Miami dropped, and I was listening to Stern today. He finally saw Promising Young Woman because that came out on paid VOD this past weekend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And News of the World's on there now. So if anyone listening to this has not heard our previous episode, there's a lot of stuff out there to watch. Tons of stuff out there to watch.
Jake has also been able to see, which is coming to limited and VOD, a film called Our Friend, which actually at Toronto last year made a huge splash. It had a screening at the Princess of Wales, and everybody who came out of it was gushing about it. So is it as good as Festival Buzz made out to be?
Look, I mean, these days it's a really so Our Friend is a true story, about a young woman, a mother, a wife who has cancer, and played by Dakota Johnson, and her husband is Casey Affleck, and they have a friend played by Jason Segel, and basically Jason Segel steps up, is the exact kind of friend that you would pray and hope that you would have in under those circumstances, goes above and beyond and helps them beyond measure get through what has got to be the most unimaginable, horrific experience of their lives. It's based on a really, really, really heartbreaking, I think, Forbes article that the husband wrote because he was a professional journalist. It's a really tough movie, you know? And when there's a movie like this that is so difficult to watch, for me, in order to recommend it, to like really tell people, hey, you should sit down and spend 2 hours of your life to watch this, good isn't good enough. Okay. Because it is so difficult and it is so heavy and it does weigh on you. There's some truly heartbreaking scenes that for me, a movie like that has to be so unbelievably transcending good that your life is incomplete without having seen it before I can say, hey, like, what, you know, it take time out of your life. It's good. It is. Okay. And the performances are really good. But with everything, like, I was watching it last week, just with everything going on in the world right now, I just kept thinking, I don't want to watch this.
Okay,
I don't want
to
be watching this.
I was under the impression that the tone was a little bit comedic and a little bit uplifting. Is it not that? Really? Oh, see, I thought the buzz coming out of Toronto was that, like, Jason Segel's kind of like a humorous portrayal.
I mean, not to the degree that he normally is.
Okay.
And are there flashes of like a little bit of, you know, but and it's sort of, it's a non-linear the way they tell the story, and progressively as the film works toward the ending, the flashes of humor become fewer and far between.
But it's not Manchester by the Sea.
It's not Manchester by the Sea, but if Manchester by the Sea is first base, this is left field.
Oh my. All right. Well, that's interesting.
So Kevin, what that means is in baseball,
I played center field, man, and I pitched.
Did you
really? I was on the All-Stars, man. Yeah. My dad gave me $20. I caught three fly balls into
Wait,
center field.
Why did he give you $20?
Cuz I caught two and he goes, "If you catch one after I went in to bat in the next inning or whatever," yeah, he was like, "If you catch one more, I'll give you a $20 bill." And I caught one more.
Yes,
dude, I'll never forget that.
I love
that.
Your dad, man.
Man, just think, if Kevin was signing $20 million contracts, he might be a pro. Just needs the incentive.
I
just,
like of all of us, Kevin has actually made money playing sports.
I miss those Capri Suns so much.
Dude, those are the best.
That's what he misses.
Oh, Capri Suns and oranges.
Pacific orange Cooler.
It's also not fair childhood to you because it relies on somebody hitting a ball out to center field.
And it happened. I don't know how, but it was an All-Star game. I caught three fly balls, or three center field balls, yeah.
Kind of remarkable. I was never able to catch a pop fly, ever. I dropped them every single time that I played. That's why I'm a movie critic right now. All right, let's get to the blend game. Hashtag movie dog blend. We are going to be talking about our favorite dog performances, movies. I'm not quite sure how we're going into this one, but I know I have to start with Jake because he is our resident dog dad. Jake Hamilton, who is your favorite movie dog?
You know, I went through a lot of different ones, and there are a lot of good potential answers. And for some reason, I took this one so personally that that I really felt like I was going to be messing up if I didn't choose the right one.
We knew you would, yes.
This was a really great one. I was very excited when Gabe told me that we were doing this. I'm going with one that I'd brought up last week, which is Shadow from Homeward Bound. Okay. That was my number one first stipulation when doing this week's game was the dog could not die. I just can't do it. I can't. Yeah. And we've discussed this at lengths in the past. I know Kevin and I have brought it up at junkets before. I can watch movies where hundreds of people are obliterated in the most horrible, inhumane, yeah, you know, way. But you touch a dog and I can't. I legit have to contemplate shutting off the movie. I just can't do it. Hmm. There's, you know, Homeward Bound I saw when I was very young. It came out when I was a kid. And it really, you know, one, I love that, like, it's animals talking to each other, but they don't do, like, mouths moving. You know, they don't try to, like, it's just the animals, and they're recording them. And then it's a voiceover track. And it really kind of introduced to me as a kid this idea of, like, really, you know, like, my dog having a personality. And I remember, like, going outside, you know, like, and, like, talking to my dog and just assuming that my dog was talking back to me. And, you know, maybe I just couldn't hear it. And that really was the first movie that kind of drove home that idea. And I mentioned this scene last week, Kevin, but the scene that might make me cry more than any other scene in movie history is at the end of the film, after they've just gone through all of this just horrible shit to get home to their family, they all go, they run back to the family one by one. It's very dramatic. The cat goes first, who is Sally Field. Then Chance goes, who is Michael J. Fox. And then there's a beat where you think that, like, Shadow didn't make it. He was older. He was having a tough time.
Oh, Shadow was the old one?
Shadow was the old one.
Who's the Shadow voice of Shadow?
I can't. Peter Welling?
Okay.
Great voice. and the music swells, and it's a I'm getting chills talking about it. The home, if you haven't heard the Homeward Bound score, particularly this moment, look, it is a gorgeous score. The music swells as the family catches a glimpse of Shadow limping out of the woods. And the whole family, oh, I'm getting like legit getting emotional talking about it. And the mother gets like a catch in her throat. And the boy, Peter, starts running toward the dog. And then the dog, Shadow, starts like limping toward him. And I will never forget what he says. What he says is like, "Peter, you're okay." And that always struck me because he's just gone through so much shit. Like, and like to get back to his family. And his first thought is, "My human is okay."
Yeah.
And I always, that
that's
always.
That's what a dog does.
That's exactly what a dog, like I'm legit tearing up talking about this. That
Jake, I have a question for you real quick.
Yeah.
In Homeward Bound, I'm trying to remember this specifically, the dog's voices would be in the narration almost. Their mouths wouldn't move, right?
Correct, yeah.
Like, so the, could like the humans hear it?
No.
Okay.
It's very much a, like, the animals can understand each other, but the humans can't, yeah.
I couldn't remember.
And just that scene of them running toward each other and Shadow just saying, "Oh, you're okay." Like, after, he's like beaten and broken and muddy and gross, and him going, "Oh, my human is okay," to me, perfectly exemplifies what we love about dogs.
Yep.
And I know that, like, no matter what, you know, with our dogs, we're all dog dads, that, like, no matter what happens to them in the day, all they care about is being with us and us being happy. That their entire, like I saw a quote one time that was like, a dog is a part of our lives, but we are a dog's entire life. And I think that that scene in that movie perfectly exemplifies that expression. And I always try to remember anytime I'm ever in a bad mood and don't really want to be messed with, I always try to remember that and get out of it and make sure that I give Daenerys all the love and attention I can, because I always think that, like, that's all she wants is my acknowledgement in life.
Very sweet.
Yeah. So for me, it's Shadow and Homeward Bound.
That is very sweet. Squirt, for whatever reason, first off, I mentioned in last week's episode that,
that
Squirt,
name is the best.
Squirt adores Homeward Bound, and he asks for us to put on Homeward Bound every time.
How's he doing though?
He says, "Put on Homeward Bound." That's his.
We talked about all of our dogs having voices. So that's Squirt's voice. Do Jack and Sally have voices?
Oh, dude, I have. I'm not even gonna do them here because they're embarrassing.
We did our voices last week.
It's like baby talk, and like Jack has like 10 different names. Oh, I used to Oscar my dog that passed away in May of last year. He had a voice. It was like, I'm trying to remember like specifically how I would imagine him talking to me in the voice. I just don't remember. Yeah.
I say any dog owner that ever tries to say like that they don't talk to their dog or their dog doesn't have a voice either is lying or is a really bad dog owner. Like, why do you not have a voice for your dog or talk to your dog?
Yeah, it's definitely embarrassing, like, to see me talk to my dogs for sure. It's like,
but I'll tell you what's weird too. Our dog Franny, who was way before Squirt, had a voice too. Very totally different. Voice than what Squirt says, and he said very specific things, and every once in a while I'll bring them back out and Michelle will just be like, "Oh, Franny," like, it's like an instant, like, the dog wasn't talking and he's not here anymore.
I believe that Oscar tried to talk to us towards the end.
Really?
like he would, when I would start coming home from work in his last year or so of his life, he would start like, He would get up on the couch and he would like talk to me as I walked in the front door. It was just like this really strange, like, it was almost like he was trying to talk, but he didn't know what words were.
Right.
And I that always blew my mind.
That I think he did know what words are. All right, I'm going to go and I'm going to say that my pick is a little left to center. I don't get very emotional with dogs. I do love dogs, but I don't get emotional with dog movies.
When did you realize that you didn't have a soul?
No, I do love dogs. And the one thing that's really different that Michelle and I cannot differ on enough is that if you have a talking dog or talking animal, but like the mouth moves.
Yeah.
That is Citizen Kane for her. Like, she cannot get enough of. If there's a category on Netflix that's just talking animals, she will sit there and binge all of them. Like, and laugh. Like, laugh like you're watching Dumb and Dumber. Like, she just thinks that's the funniest thing in the entire world. I can't stand that. But I went with Gromit from Wallace and Gromit, which I just think are phenomenally funny films. I first off completely admire the stop motion animation that goes into making those films. The short films I love so much. They're very, very British. And I love the concept of that the human is such an idiot and the dog has to be so much smarter than him in order to keep their day to day sort of going. And they come up with these really wild inventions, but then they always sort of escalate into really weird adventures that they go on. And the dog is always the one who's kind of saving the day. And he's got these amazing looks. Like, he's always just giving him a really snarky look or some such look that says, like, I can't believe how stupid my human is. I couldn't believe when they did a Wallace and Gromit Curse of the Were-Rabbit feature. And I thought, well, this is going to be terrible. And then it was hysterical. Like, everything about it is so hilarious. And so, when I was looking over the list of things, as soon as I saw Gromit, I was like, oh, that's going to be fantastic. And just emotionally, too, Brendan, as a kid growing up, PJ watched everything that was like uber kid friendly, like everything that was just geared toward his age. And when we got to Brendan, I got tired of watching all that stuff. So he went into like Indiana Jones and Gremlins and all these other things like super early, like too early. And I know that I messed him up, you know, somehow really badly by letting him watch all that stuff because PJ was watching like Little Einsteins and all these other age appropriate things. But the only animated type show that Brendan really latched onto was Wallace and Gromit. And so we would watch those shorts endlessly. And so that's my pick. I'm going with Gromit.
That's
so
a great
good one.
Kev,
really good one.
What do you got?
I'm going to ask your permission to give you guys two, but I'll give you my number one, but the number two is very close to it.
We'll sure. allow it.
So the number one,
what
I'm going to give.
What if we said no? Like, no.
Yeah, you're like, you no. Yeah. My number one is only number one because it's been my number one, I guess. Because it's interesting. Like, I was looking through like the history of movies I watched as a kid. And initially I was thinking like Milo from The Mask. But then I was like, all right, there's other dogs that I know for sure have meant more to me. And the number one dog for me ever in cinema history is Hercules from Sandlot. I mean, I just...
Yeah. Good one. I actually thought that was going to be your pick.
Love that. I mean, I love the entire film. He's considered to be this like horrific like dog beast that wants to kill the kids. And then he's just like... And then when he gives the kiss... Was he kisses... was it Smalls or Benny? Benny? Because he chases Benny... in his P.F. Chang's, and then I think Smalls ends up getting kissed by him because he puts his face right next to his face and he licks Smalls' face and before they go into James Earl Jones' house. And like that, to me, was always classic because I always loved the horror of the dog going, the ball going over the fence and then knowing they wouldn't get the ball back. And then you would hear these incredible sound effects. There's this whole black and white sequence they do when they're in the treehouse. They tell a story about the dog's history and how dangerous it is. And
that's the forever. Yeah.
That's the forever moment. But there's like I'll never forget. They call him Benny the Jet Rodriguez, right? And like, and so he laces up his P.F. Chang's and they go on that gigantic chase scene together where the dog is just chasing after him. They go over parties and all this kind of stuff. And they eventually get back full circle to James Earl Jones's house. And I just remember the dog being ultimately so sweet. And I just kind of love that arc of that character. And
good pick.
Because you have to understand, like the dog in The Sandlot is kind of like the shark in Jaws. Except for it's not mean.
Yeah.
Because like the whole time we're watching The Sandlot, we basically don't know what the dog looks like from a realistic perspective other than like what's been built up from the audience perspective, what the characters tell us about the dog. Mm-hmm. So I always found that interesting how we as an audience also came to judge the dog based on the characters' fears and decisions until they eventually go. And what was it James Earl Jones says at the end of the movie? He goes, just come over and knock next time. I'll get the ball for you. And the whole movie was about them losing the Babe Ruth ball. Right. Oh, I love when he gives them the whole Yankees signed ball at the end. That's my number one. My number two, which is really close, and I almost went with this only because I love it so much. I rewatched it again this weekend, is Brandy from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Because like that, I'll never forget. Every time I watch that film, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is kind of a non-scene, but it speaks to the character that Brad Pitt plays. It's when he first gets home and we first meet Brandy, and there's that brilliant sequence where like Tarantino shows him pouring that wolf dog food, whatever, and it slowly comes out of the canister and plops into the food bowl.
Doesn't
and,
she like lick her lips at that moment?
Yeah. And he's like, he just like, what does he do? Like the whatever that thing he does, and then she runs to it. But then Brandy's arc at the end, That whole callback is just unbelievable. And like that whole sequence is just incredible. And I just loved, I loved Brad Pitt's relationship with that dog. I thought it was an incredible part to the story. So those are my two. My number one, if I had to go ultimate, would be Hercules. But I do love Brandy in Hollywood. So
very nice. Gabe.
For posterity, Kev, do you have, do you know your Christopher Walken pick that you missed out last week? Do you know what you would have picked?
Oh, I would
have to get into it.
The True Romance.
That's what we figured.
That's what we figured.
Yeah, just primarily
we
kind of
unofficially picked it for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of the, that's one of those scenes that, like, to have those two heavy hitters sitting there, it's a really hard scene to discuss and say you like, because there are, the dialogue in that scene is very, very disturbing. Just a warning for people out there who are, might go look it up and go, what the hell's wrong with that guy? No, it's Tarantino. It's very graphic, but it's the performance of him just sitting in that chair. When he says, I know the whole line. He goes, I'm Vincent Cicatti. He goes, you tell the angels from heaven you've never seen evil so singularly personified as you did in the face of the man that killed you. And that's how he introduces himself to Hopper. And just the delivery of that. And like, there's this one moment where like, I think it's after he shoots Hopper. He just does this disgusting spit off to the corner after wiping the blood off of his outfit from the fishbowl. The details of that character in that very small, minimal scene spoke volumes. And I just think he like completely, like, I mean, it's a very brutal scene, but dialogue wise, bless you, delivery wise, no question, that's my favorite Walken. What was y'all's?
Gabe went with Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Jake did Catch Me If You Can, and I did Hairspray.
Hairspray's a good one. He was great in Hairspray.
It's terrific. Yeah,
great. Pulp Fiction. Yeah, all those are great choices.
Another really good one. All right, audience picks for dogs. Jeff Mammon said Sam from I Am Legend. Good choice.
Oh, no.
Joel McFarlane says the dog from Independence Day, which is one of those scenes that, like, in any other type of movie, when the dog is, remember the dog sort of jumps as the fireball
really
is going
CGI
through the tunnel?
Shot where, like, the dog just kind of...
I would laugh it off, but it works really well, works really well in that Independence Day scene. Megs chose Holly Berry's pups in John Wick 3, which cool. If you want to know about the training of those dogs, please go find our interview with Chad Stahelski. Stephanie DeLise says Chance from Homeward Bound. Kimberly Sue chose Shadow from Homeward Bound. And Daniel McDonald says Hooch from Turner and Hooch. So thank you all.
Are there no Sandlots? No Sandlots? That's unbelievable to me. That's like
There might have been some that came in after I pulled these, but I didn't see any.
For everybody who wants to play along with next week's game, we are going to be playing... Whew, man, I wish we had more time to play this one, Gabe, because we're doing hashtag Denzel Washington.
I wish we had more time.
So let us know your pick for your favorite Denzel. Hashtag Denzel Washington Blend on social media, or you can email us at realblend@cinemablend.com. That is where you can also leave us a review. And this week's review comes from Damian McDonald, who also just participated in the dog game that we just did. And Damian is writing us from Ireland. He writes, my friend Chris Quattro put me onto you guys back in early 2019. And from my first listen, I was hooked, so much so that I've gone back and re-listened to some episodes, from Kevin's love of how films are shot and the aspect ratios to Jake's brilliant questions and interviews, except the Matthew Modine one. Ouch. He literally says. to Sean's love for all things Marvel and Snyder Cut related. Looking forward to the book. Pre-ordered it ages ago. Thank you, sir. And Gabe's omnipresence. The banter you guys have is just infectious, and those unbelievably good puns, he says. I sit and listen to you guys and laugh along with the jokes, and sometimes find myself talking out loud like I am there with you. The interviews you have are always spot on, and recently, after listening to the episode, I will go back to the YouTube version to see certain reactions and the hopes of seeing either Daenerys or Jack and Sally, and also to see all the amazing stuff that Michael Giacchino pulled out to show you guys. The Spotify Wrapped showed me that I listened to 4,754 minutes of you guys in 2020, and I have to admit, every minute was well spent.
Wow.
Hopefully 2021 is different, and you guys get to travel, and that you make your way to Dublin so that we can organize a Blender meetup. I know a number of people would be well up for that. So that is fantastic, and I would love that to be a goal. Wow. Gabe, what do you think? Is there a travel budget available for 2021, Dublin meetup?
Yeah, we're just waiting for the American government to allow that to happen. I think that's the only interference.
It may take a little while then at this point. So thank you very much.
A better producer would be able to make it happen.
Right? That's what I have to say, too. It's fairly disappointing.
Maybe if he had a can-do attitude, Gabe.
Damien, thank you so much for that review. We really appreciate you listening and for taking the time to send in. Our next premium episode, guys, which we're going to record right after this, is, like I mentioned, a listener mailbag. Check the description for the link to show you guys where you can go to sign up for the premium episodes that you guys can join into more Real Blend in your week. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode and an interview as well, too. You can, in the meantime, follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, and at Sean_O'Connell. Because we need a new thing to shout out at the end of the episodes to encourage a director to come on, we're shouting out Spielberg titles. And so I'm going to end. Oh, I think I decided what I'm going to have to end my episode with every single week. Until next week, Blenders, we'll see you soon. And Amistad!
No, stop. No.
Why? Come on.
No.
Minority Report?
Minority Report.
Minority Report. Thank you.